Well, Teresa is going to share some wonderful, good information with us tonight. And she is such a brilliant woman. She had her RN, and she's got her master's in nursing. She's about to come. She's got a lot of other lists of things up there that I can't even tell what they are. But she's working on her doctorate, isn't that correct? And about to get finished with her doctorate, which will be wonderful. And so tonight she's going to share some really good and solid and important information regarding the season of life that most of us are in which we need to be smart and make decisions and not wait to the last minute to try to figure it all out. And she's going to share with us exactly how we can do that. And so without any further comment, please welcome Teresa Hill. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you so much. As the Pastor Lynn has said, this church has been so important to my family for the past 15 years. And yes, I am back in school and working. My topic for my thesis is about advanced care planning, and this is something that is very close to my heart. I'm an oncology nurse by background. Not only do I deal with a lot of adults, but I deal with a lot of adults in difficult situations. And sometimes it comes to a point where decisions need to be made and there aren't plans in place. And so really, one of the things I'm doing is trying to help people be aware of some of the planning that needs to be made, taking time, encouraging people to take the time to make plans, to pick who your choice people would be, who would be your advocates. And so I'm going to talk to y'all about that tonight, about what is advanced care planning and what does it mean. I think everyone has one of these brochures. I've got plenty of extra outside. I've also got discussion guides if you want to take to talk to friends and family members. For anybody who is willing to fill out a survey, I have surveys too that I'll collect at the end of the night, and those just go into my thesis. But by no means, you do not have to do the survey. What's most important is that I want you to have this information. So tonight we're going to talk about what is advanced care planning, why does it matter, how to get started if you do not have an advanced care plan. This is actually a legal document once it has been witnessed by two people, and what are the next steps that you can take. And the most important thing you're going to see is not, we would like everybody to have a written advanced care plan, but what's most important is that you have these discussions with your loved ones and that you have these plans in place. If you have any questions, we're in a large group, make notes. We're going to have a section for questions, but I'm also going to be here afterwards if y'all want to talk one-on-one, and I'm usually around. The pastor knows how to get a hold of me, so anytime that you want to talk, then I am absolutely can find time to talk with you. So what is advanced care planning? It really is the process of making and discussing decisions about medical care and treatments that you would want or would not want at end of life. And then also choosing who is going to be your decision maker or your advocate, who is going to speak for you if you cannot. And what's important is that it's not just going to be one person that you're going to want to have. Ideally, you're going to have a backup and a backup to the backup. What is most important is really what matters to you and making sure the people around you know that. There is no right or wrong. This isn't, oh, well, I have to make this decision because this family member wants it. It's about what you want. It's an ongoing process. What you may have thought you wanted 5 years ago may be different now. If you complete an advanced care plan and change your mind, you can always modify it. That is not a problem. And you may decide that the plan that I had a few years ago is different because of healthcare changes, because of family or support changes, just life experiences. Things change. We change what we want. Who really should have an advanced care plan? It's not just this group that is a little bit on the older side. It is actually everybody over 18. ideally should have an advanced care plan. And one of the interesting things that they found is whenever they do these talks with college students are actually much more open at putting down what they want and having some solid ideas about healthcare decisions, which surprises a lot of people. It's actually, I think, a little bit harder once you get older and it becomes a little bit more real to sometimes put these decisions down and to have conversations with your loved ones about what you really want. There's some people that feel, well, if I talk about it, it's going to happen. And more than likely, you can end up in trouble if you don't have some of these discussions. So it's going to ensure that you or your significant loved ones receive the care at end of life that aligns with what they would want as a unique person. Again, there is no right or wrong answer. What I may want may be very different than what somebody else wants, and that is totally okay. It's important that you people know so you do not receive unwanted medical care, but also that if there is something that you are really do want, that it's written down and people know. And loved ones, healthcare providers, they do not want to be the ones making these decisions. They want to know that you've really expressed these wishes to somebody else. It's really hard to guess what somebody wants if they haven't sat down and had the conversations with you. A lot of people will say, well, they know. They just know what I want. I can tell you they do not know what you want if you have not told them directly. And I've been in the situation and assumed, I thought, I was pretty sure what they wanted, but I couldn't be 100% sure. And that is a really hard position to be in. Just like it's a really hard position to be in if you are the healthcare provider, because I used to make hospital rounds a lot. And if I was making hospital rounds on you, it was not a good thing. And one of the first things I did in almost every chart was go through and find who is my main contact person, who is going to be in charge of making decisions if I need somebody else besides the patient to make a decision. And as a provider, we don't want to be the ones having to make these decisions. We want to know that we are doing what that patient absolutely would have wanted. So we know that whenever it comes to end of life, last few weeks of care typically, about 70% of the population will not be able to make their own decisions. All of us want to be in the 30% that up until the very end, we are able to say exactly what we want, but the vast majority of us will not be able to. And yet 66% of people have not had this conversation with their loved ones. Again, it's assuming that they know, but not actually sitting down and having that conversation. And 80% of the people do think it's absolutely important, they just haven't gotten around to it for whatever reason. And again, it may be that superstition of saying, well, if I speak it into existence, it will happen. So that's where this document comes in. If you do not already have an advanced care plan in place, this actually is a nationally recognized document across all 50 states, and it's the Five Wishes Guide. It's very nice because it's got a lot of information in here for you, and out on the desk I have extras of these, and I also have conversation guides that help guide you in conversations with family members. If you take this, you're like, I have this done, but you know what? My neighbor doesn't. My best friend doesn't. My children do not. Take them. Have conversations with them. This is going to help you communicate what you want. And again, in the state of Texas, it is one of the states that does require an extra step. For this to become a full legal document, it has to be witnessed by two people, one of which cannot be a family member or somebody who is directly involved in your health care, not your doctor or nurse, or if you're paid to be in a facility, they cannot sign for you. You need the pastor who is not interested in your health care. He may be interested in your soul care, but he's he can be a secondary witness. This is going to address who You're going to choose to make that you would want to make those healthcare decisions for you. In Texas, that is your medical power of attorney. Different states have different names sometimes. If you have a document from another state, it will be honored in the state of Texas. If you have this and you end up in trouble and you're in Colorado or somewhere else and you have a copy, they will still honor this no matter where you are. What the healthcare facilities like to know is, oh, you've thought about this, you put it down. Okay, that's what we want to follow. So choosing your person, the kind of medical treatment you do or don't want is documented in here. The last three wishes are a little bit different than what they do at a lot of the attorney offices, which is just the top two. Wish three, four, and five. Wish three is how comfortable you want to be. Wish four is how you want people to treat you. And wish five is what do you want the loved ones to know? And these are very personal decisions that sometimes people really don't think about beforehand. So in this document on page four and five in here, this is deciding who you want to be as your medical power of attorney. This allows you to name that healthcare agent to act on your behalf, and this only goes into effect at the point that you cannot make your own decisions. If you have this filled out, it doesn't mean that they can go and make any decisions for you while you are still up and walking around and with it. This would only be at the very end whenever you could not make decisions on your own. The ideal is to have your first choice, then a backup, and then a backup to the backup. So three people. And again, you're always going to be able to make your own healthcare decisions until you reach the point that you cannot communicate and understand the decisions being made. So it's not going to take effect until you are too sick to make those decisions. Who should you choose as your person? Do they have to be related to you? No, this can be anybody that you choose, the person that you think that person is going to advocate for me, that person's going to go to bat for me. I have been medical power of attorney for my best friend. I've been medical power of attorney, the primary one, for my mother-in-law. So it doesn't have to go into the order that, oh, well, I have a duty to this family member or to that family member. It's about who you think is going to advocate for you and stand up for you and make the tough decisions. It's that person who is going to honor your wishes, who is going to be able to talk to healthcare providers and stand up for you. You also need to think about is where do they live? Are they close enough? Are they going to be able to contact this person if something happens? Many people may already have a medical power of attorney, but may not have thought about it in quite a while. They kind of put it away in a drawer. And you need to think, is my medical power of attorney and those backup, are they still the choices that I would want? This person needs to be able to be comfortable answering questions for the doctor, the insurance companies, providers, and is going to stand up for you. That's a huge responsibility. And sometimes a person may not want to take that responsibility on. You know, as an adult with children, one of your children may say, I'm sorry, mom or dad, I can't do that. And that is okay. And it's better to know that up front again than them ending up in a situation that your wishes are not going to be honored. If you do not have an advance directive in place or medical power of attorney, what is going to happen if you end up in the hospital and they don't know what to do? The medical providers, I come in as a provider and I'm like, okay, I don't know who to go to. I'm going to go down order of priority. I'm going to go to spouse first, as long as there's a spouse. If there is not a spouse, then it's going to go to the adult child. If there is not an adult child available, and there's parents still alive, then it goes to the parents. Then it starts going down to the closest relative that you can find. If there is nobody available, it then goes to two physicians, and usually the ethic board of the hospital, to start making decisions for you on their behalf and having to sign it off. But there again, no provider wants to be in that situation. Are there any questions I can answer right now? Or we can, I'll be available afterwards also. We'll go on to the next section, which is the living, what we call the living will portion. This is my wish for the kind of medical treatment I do or do not want. This booklet, if you look at it, it does a really nice job on page 6 and 7. This is what's commonly known as a living will. Talks about, gives examples of life support treatment. It's not just a ventilator. It's also thinking about, would I want a feeding tube? Would I want antibiotics? Are there certain treatments I would or would not want? So this gives you some nice examples to think through. You cross out what you would want. You know, you can just think, nope, I wouldn't want that. They have check marks to put down. But if you have not thought about specific examples, this gives you some nice things to really think about. And again, this wish only goes into effect if you have an end-of-life condition. If you have a living will or advanced directive, and you're going in for elective surgery or even open heart surgery, they're not going to say, oh, we can't do anything because they have a living will. Absolutely not. They're going to do absolutely everything they can until, this is only whenever you have a condition that they think you're not going to recover from. Any questions? Wish 3, 4, and 5. These are the ones that I really like. They address physical, emotional, and spiritual comfort, legacy wishes, and this is what makes the 5 wishes document a little bit more unique. Whenever we talk about wish 3 on page 8, it's how comfortable I want to be. Some people, they say, just give me all the drugs. I want to be out of it. I don't want to be with it. Other people are like, you know what? I really do not want pain medicine because I want to be as clear-headed as possible. But you know what? I don't want to be nauseated. I do like it whenever people massage or rub on me. I do. There are other ways that I can be comforted. So making sure you know those things. Wish number 4, how I want people to treat me. Do I want somebody in there doing music and readings? Do I want visitors or would I not want visitors? Again, very unique to individuals. Some people want everybody to come and see them. Other people are like, I do not want anybody to see me at end of life. But your family, your loved ones won't know that unless you've really had some of these conversations with them. So this is really about thinking about what you would want and making sure your family knows so they're not put in the situation of trying to figure it out on their own. And then wish 5 on page 9 is what I want my loved ones to know. And this is something that you may not even want to write down right now, but you may want to keep private. But it really encourages you to think about those things that are deeply important. Do you need to ask forgiveness from somebody? Do you need to have your preferences for burial? Would you want to be cremated? Would you want for the memorial service? This gives you a time to think about those things and put them down in writing. And again, there is no right or wrong whenever we come to these decisions, but it is about having the conversations, really taking time with your loved ones, not continuing to put it off. I have to say my mother and mother-in-law were really good with having things planned out and able to have discussions. My mother, she, of course, had cancer for a couple of years. She knew that we were going to be faced with the situation, and she would, at every holiday, whenever we were together, she would like just a reminder, and we would go through documents with her, just saying, it's all here. I have everything situated. I just want you to know what I want. And it made it so easy. At the end, we knew exactly what she wanted. And it is such a gift to your family and to your loved ones whenever you can do some of the simple planning, the most important part, again, is talking with them about it. Thinking about it and talking with them. The ideal is to absolutely complete a written documentation and give it to your physician, but it has to start with having the conversation. So next step, think about what you want most. Talk to about your wishes to the people that matter to you. Talk to your healthcare provider, which I know can be hard whenever healthcare is fragmented, but if you're in a big system, if you go to a Baylor primary care doctor and you've actually completed a document, whether it's this one or another one, give it to them to file. So that way, then if you went into a hospital in that system, they're going to be able to pull it up. They can easily find it, and everybody is going to know. Whenever you're signing and witnessing on page 10, if you use this document, you will see on page 10, it gives you a place to sign, print your name, read it carefully, and then again, you're going to have two witnesses, one that is not related or involved in your care. You're going to sign in front of witnesses. They do not have to read it. Your witnesses don't have to know any of this information. Your loved ones do. Then you make additional copies of this. Give it to your family members, especially those that are making decisions for you, your primary care doctor, and again, ideally the healthcare systems that you go to. I would keep one. I've got a drawer in my living room, so if I ever had to call an ambulance for anybody in my household, then I could easily grab it. What's important to know that this is not a document that you fill out and it's set in stone. If you change your mind, or if you lose your primary decision maker, which can happen, and you need to modify it that way, you just simply cross through the old one and make a new one. Cross through the old one, put that date, make a new one with a new date, and give it to all of the people that are involved in your care. So it's not set in stone, it just would need to be updated. They say do not make one, just don't have this original and put it in the safety deposit box so then nobody can get to it. It's important that you have it available and have plenty of copies, so if it's needed, it's easy to access. They also do have the five wishes document online if you prefer digital. You can't always go online to five wishes